The first thing is, of course, this is radio, so we better make sure we have the right person in the room. So could you identify yourself, please?
Well, yes, this is Lindsay Buckingham. We flew in from Los Angeles this afternoon and flew over many of the spots which are reference points for me since I grew up down the peninsula. Point Lobos and the Monterey Peninsula and then over San Jose and then into...
And what a beautiful day to do.
Oh, beautiful day. And then over Moffett Field and over Palo Alto and Atherton where I grew up, over Stanford University. I think there may be a few surprises, a couple of old friends, certainly a good number of my family that are still here, my older brother and lots of nieces and nephews and sister-in-laws and sisters-in-law. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, having grown up down the peninsula, I think we all would say, gee, you know, none of us will ever live in L.A., but, you know, Stevie and I ended up doing that, and I think the cliche to some degree holds true. Once you leave, you don't come back, or at least not for a long, long time. And
Sunset Grill, right?
Yes, and, you know, when I come back here, I am repeatedly reminded of what a special environment that this is from San Francisco on down, and so... I always tell my wife now that we're going to move, but it's all a matter of timing.
The musical landscape was very different when you grew up here, wasn't it?
Well, sure. The entire cultural landscape was different in the 60s and the 50s. I mean, the musical landscape was about adult music when I first started listening. And then, of course, as with many other people, you had Elvis Presley who showed up in the household and transformed that into a whole market for the younger people. And a role model for many of us to begin to try to become instrumentalists as well. And, you know, that transformed into, you know, the 60s, which was certainly the Haight-Ashbury and the Fillmore and all of the things that were going on in San Francisco were pretty much the embodiment of that. And it was just a great time. It was all about finding new things. It was all about spontaneity. It was all about, to some degree, thumbing your nose at the quote establishment, looking for other ways to live, other ways to think, and. You know, that was an exciting time, and it wasn't really just here. It was pretty much, you know, around the...
We got a sneak preview when Shut Us Down was featured in Elizabethtown. And, you know, depending on which way you read it, the album was 10 years in the making and much of it on the road in hotels and the 16-track recorder. But, you know, that's the stuff that's already lore. What I'm more interested in, I have a 5-year-old daughter, so... You know, who's the love of my life, and like you, I waited a little while. You know, I didn't have my daughter at 21 years old, so this record, as I was listening to it, I shared a lot of personal moments with you, and it really talks about how one never stops growing.
Well, you know, I have an 8-year-old son, a 6-year-old daughter, and a 2-year-old daughter. Now, I don't think the 2-year-old has any real handle on any of that. On a more general level, because she looks more like me than the other two, she has a little bit more of what I would think is my makeup in her. There tends to be, we tend to gravitate towards each other. But in terms of her really knowing anything about the outside perception of her dad or even the way I perceive myself on that level, absolutely not. But I have to say, my 8-year-old and my 6-year-old, a couple of years ago, had the chance to see me in the arenas with Fleetwood Mac, sit on the side of the stage and watch Daddy show off, as my son Will said. And I think because of that, they have a healthy skepticism for the trappings, which I think is important. They do get stuff from the schoolyard about, oh, your dad's a whatever. But I think it is tempered at this point. And really, one of the significant things about a show we just did the other day in Los Angeles, in Orange County, was that they were both now old enough to come and sit in the audience and watch Dad play. Uh-huh. And in a context which is not Fleetwood Mac, which is...
A very personal context.
Yes, very much his own. They know there are many songs about them, one in particular, which a lot of their friends know has been written about them. And I think... You know, as you say, in not the song Not Too Late, part of what gets addressed is that there can be a kind of an irony or a push-pull when you find yourself in a place which is artistically valid but may have many, many ties and a lot of baggage to the past, and that children in their ever-present state, you know, don't quite get that there can be kind of an understanding of that.
And the perception of time is very different at those ages.
Yes, and they don't understand sometimes when Dad is in the studio and he can't come out to play. And so mm-hmm. I think what that concert did for them was it filled in a gap for them as to who their dad was. Not as far as the perception by the world, but just in terms of their own and in terms of Dad's feeling about himself. And that was a great evening for me.
Down on Rodeo really was the first track I played, interestingly enough, because I knew about the single, but I wanted to play something different. Was that one of the songs originally intended to be on the Fleetwood Mac album?
Well, that song and the one after it, Someone's Gotta Change Your Mind, were the two songs that you could say were holdovers from the group of tunes that were on the Fleetwood Mac album. You know, a bit earlier you were mentioning that, you know, this particular album, Under the Skin, was 10 years in the making, but it really wasn't. In a more generic sense, the attempt to make a solo album was 10 years in the making, which got waylaid several times, once when we did the dance with Fleetwood Mac, and then a second time when I was poised to do that with the material that ended up on Say You Will, the Fleetwood Mac album. They wanted to put together a new studio album, and so that material then got diverted into being part of a Fleetwood Mac album.
It's just all a lot of songs in the end, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and those particular songs did have John and Mick all over them. So, yes, the two songs that are carryovers, Rodeo and Someone's Gotta Change Your Mind, are both things that go back to maybe 1997, and they predate my marriage. They predate my having children, obviously. Down on Rodeo, as the one you mentioned.
It's a rock and roll song.
Well, it's all, but it's about, you know, it's. I think the analogy is Rodeo Drive in Beverly
yes.
Hills, where a lot of people I know and a lot of the endeavors that we engage in, we seem to do on a fairly surface level. We seem to not always keep in mind that in order to really get to the meaning and the meat of any kind of thing you want to do, you've got to try and you've got to dig deep. And it's you know, the illusion of people walking up and down Rodeo Drive window shopping.
Now, you chose to cover two relatively obscure songs, at least to most people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm Waiting, Jagger and Richards, and Try for the Sun by Donovan, that I went and looked up, and that was back in his Hickory Records days. So that was really... Were those always favorites, or did they just fit into the theme of the album?
Well, both. I think that those were songs that, one of a few, really, more than those two, that I had just held on to. I was interested in a few songs that I valued and that I treasured from when I was a kid that were obscure. That was one of the criteria. But I think, more importantly, those two in particular ended up being excellent vehicles for a style of guitar playing that I wanted to have represented in a certain, you know, in quite a large amount on this album. And so, you know, the ultimate decision was that they succeeded as guitar picking pieces.
Everything from the delays to the phasing to the mix of the instruments is fanatical, of course, and your audience would not expect anything less.
Well, yeah, I you know, again, aside from those two songs that we already mentioned, I had not the interesting thing was that the material for that ended up on the Say You Will album, because that had not found a home for a while, I had not written any new songs. So once that got placed and found a home, and once Fleetwood Mac was out on the road and I had some time, you know, days off in hotel rooms, I started writing. I couldn't stop it. And it immediately felt as if the material that might have been a solo album that ended up with Fleetwood Mac was destined to be there, and that what I was now doing was so much more appropriate for where my life was, you know, what had happened in my personal life. And one of those things was that many songs that had started off as ensemble pieces, Big Love would be one, Go Insane would be another, had become presented on stage as a single guitar and voice. And I began to think more and more about how interesting that was. Those were really strong connections with the audience. They were also, it was like almost a cycle of coming back onto myself, and I thought, okay, this would be an interesting thing to try. It's like one guitar, in some cases, two guitars, maybe if you're in the hotel room, you're finding a sound, hitting a couch, very, very empty in terms of instrumentation, but then, you know, really go for it with the production. You know?
I was just going to say, an indie album by Lindsey Buckingham is a very, very, very different statement than a, quote, indie homebrewed album by most artists today, by a long shot.
Well, you know, again, that's the two things that I consider myself the best at probably are a guitar playing and production. I mean, I am a writer, but I tend to think of myself more as a stylist. So, you know, to take a really pared down approach, which again, if I might say, seemed very appropriate with someone who had become a husband and a father of three since his last solo effort, it seemed much more in the moment than the material that might have been from before. And then, you know, just to still be very assertive about your use of production values, shall we say.
I like the word assertive. I was going to use aggressive, but assertive is a good one. I think what I've discovered in playing your music over the years is that nobody's been able to label it. I'm looking forward, particularly tonight when I come to the show, I heard that even the dog barks are still in Holiday Road, every inch of that, so.
Well, you know, we're trying to get, would you be out there like participating as a dog?
I would be going, if you did not put them in there, I'd be going woof, 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 woof on the fade out, so yes.
Well, we may ask you to do that anyway.
Would you like me to do that? I can do roof, roof, roof. I can do it on beat. I don't even need a metronome. I can do it for you.
All right, or off.
Yes, he's obsessed. Thank you very much. But all kidding aside, did you see the movie and did they come to you? Or because that, every time, and I've gone back and watched the movie, you know, once in a while because it's just so dumb, but it became this ridiculous cult classic, and that movie opens, and you're laughing just because you hear the song, and not because it's a funny song, but because it really, you know, there's a lot of movie themes that set the tone for what's to come, Jaws or whatever, but this does it in a whole, you know, you can only visualize.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, I had only seen little parts of that movie, and it was just one of those situations where I connected with the people involved, and Harold Ramis was such a great guy who directed it, and I certainly loved Eugene Levy a lot. You know, those people from Second City were just big idols of mine for a long time, and you know, the movie was, you know, sort of almost predates, I don't know, Farrelly Brothers type things and things which are dumb, or even Will Ferrell. But it wasn't really based on the movie. It was just based on a situation. And I think what happened was it was just, again, I don't want to call it luck, but it was just a fortunate set of circumstances where what we ended up with fit and enhance the movie so well.
But it's the pacing. I mean, that thing moves. That's 2 minutes and some odd seconds, and what's packed in there is the energy of what, the kineticism of what happens in the movie.
Yeah, and a certain dumbness, and you've got the dogs, and I don't know, even the song at the end, which was sort of based on, over the credits, which was based on an old Mills Brothers kind of idea, it was one of those situations where they were just thrilled that they had gotten something so appropriate, and I was thrilled that I got lucky, and I never wanted to do it again.
So now, I read that you're, quote, halfway through the next solo album, so is that going to be a more formal affair, or similar sort of circumstances?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting circumstance for me in general, because, as you know, it has taken me generally a lot of time between solo works, and I guess most of the time you can, you know, put that at the feet of Fleetwood Mac. It's certainly, you know, it was my choice always, but when you walk the line between trying to be responsive to a larger situation and then your own thing, that's what happens. But this time, I've gotten a lot of encouragement from a lot of different people to go ahead and do this, tour as much as I want behind it, let it, because this is not going to be a radio, it's not going to go through radio channels.
We were going to go there, but you know what, that's obvious to me that that's not the relevant factor here.
You know, it's going to go through the back doors, and it's going to come up through a little bit of groundswell and word of mouth. That's what this will be. And at the end of the day, my expectations on a commercial level are obviously, I hope, realistic, because it is an art album. It's the album I wanted to make.
You still play tracks from Tusk,
right?
You know, the controversial album, and you still play, you know, worked on the Super Bowl. So was it just slightly ahead of its time, you think, or?
Well, you know, the thing about Tusk was, that's a whole interesting thing, and I guess you could say without that album or without the eventual outcome, it probably, you could make a case for saying I probably would never have started solo work. After this incredible phenomenon called Rumors, which at some point you have to assume disengaged itself from the music and became more about the phenomenon itself and the voyeurism and all of that. We were, you know, poised to make what could have been called Rumors 2. Certainly there were those who would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah.
And not that that would have been a bad thing. I don't think we would have necessarily been able to do that, even if we had wanted to. But the fact that we had found a formula that others wanted us to try to repeat, that's a point where you're kind of, what am I doing here? And I really wanted to find something else to subvert that and to undercut that. So, you know, we found new ways of working. The band got into that. We came up with an album a year later that was, you know, far more esoteric. And the band was very behind that. I can only imagine what the board meetings were like when we gave it to him at Warner. If you cut to the chase on all of that, once it did not sell 16 million albums, then you have the band coming to me and saying, well, we still want you to produce, but you can't do this and you can't do this, which became such an arbitrary set of limitations that there was really nowhere to go with the left side of the palette but on solo work.
So what I want to quickly do with you, and we can only do it for a couple of minutes because our time is running out, but a little trademark thing, we call it a musical sandwich. So what I want you to do is just pick two songs from the album and then just riff for 2 minutes a bunch of other music you'd like to hear in between, and I will play it exactly as you ask for it. Yeah. Or you can just say, play a pile of the album and a bunch of Fleetwood Mac songs and some Beatles, and we can just be all set.
Well, let's see. For the sandwich, for the bread, mm-hmm. shall we say, let's try Not Too Late. Mm-hmm. And Under the Skin. How's that?
Beautiful.